I think it's really important that the whole world is, you know, trying to improve animal welfare everywhere in the world. And I think the push does kind of have to come from countries where there's already a lot of expertise regarding these things, which is generally, yeah, in the US or in Europe and the UK. So, yeah, in my opinion, I think there needs to be a lot of capacity building and knowledge transfer over to Asia in general.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show. I'm starting as a new host from today. This is my first episode in this longer version. You have been seeing me in the shorter version of Nutrition Black Belt. Today is we have a longer, which is a podcast show, Poultry Podcast Show. We have a very amazing guest in this episode today. She is Miss Kara Wilcox. So, Kara, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome to the program. We're so glad to have you. Kara is currently a PhD student in an animal husbandry faculty of Universitas Padjaran in Bandung, Indonesia. Kara, would you like to introduce about your work and what you are doing right now and maybe a little bit about your previous accomplishments or work?
Okay, sure. Yeah, thank you very much. Hi, my name's Kara. I'm originally from England, but I live in Indonesia. I've been here for about 9 years now. So my background is in animal behavior and animal welfare. And I worked in wildlife conservation for a while as well, and in primate research, you know, wild primates living in the forest for a while. But then I decided I wanted to get back into animal welfare, and I managed to secure a PhD program in Universitas Padjaran in Indonesia. So what my project is about broiler chicken welfare in West Java specifically. So I'm just starting my third year of the program. So I've done my data collection now, and I'm just starting my data analysis and writing up, hopefully. Yeah,
that's the exciting part, right? PhD work and all this. It's a lot of hard work.
Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to dig deeper into the poultry health challenges you face. By gathering scientific evidence, they identify the most effective combinations of natural ingredients that improve animal health. Visit naturalbiologics.com/poultry. to see the newest research in both turkeys and chickens.
So I would like to ask you a little bit about the welfare situation of animal welfare in Indonesia, if you want to talk a little bit about, like, what kind of research, not only you, but people in the universities in Indonesia. I don't know how big of this welfare push there is. And what is there? What is the scene of those animal welfare?
Yeah, so as you can maybe imagine, animal welfare is not really a big topic in Asia in general, really, but particularly in Indonesia. There isn't really a lot of research. So I'm kind of, particularly in broiler chickens, I'm kind of starting out, really. So that's why my PhD is kind of like finding the baseline of what is the situation, what's affecting broiler chicken welfare. But there is other projects beginning here. So there's a fair bit going on with layer hens and trying cage-free systems and things like that. And there's quite a lot of good work going on in that aspect, particularly some groups like Global Food Partners and Compassion and things like that. They're really starting to work with farmers and the markets and trying to develop a proper market for the cage-free system. But in terms of broiler chickens, there isn't really anything yet. So that's what we're working on at the moment with my university and my supervisors here. I'm also in collaboration with Scotland's Rural Project, Scotland's Rural College in Edinburgh in Scotland. And one of my supervisors is over there, and yeah, she's great as well. So we have connections with them as well.
That's cool. Thank you for sharing that. I was just curious. No, that's amazing. I was just curious about when you mentioned about the broiler welfare. What particularly in that area are you trying to investigate on? Especially, what's your research about? If you can just tell a little bit.
So my research, I have three aspects to my research project. So one of them is, so I've been going to farms and doing partly a social survey with the farmers to understand what their perspective is on animal welfare and how they think their animal welfare is on their farms and what they think affects it and any worries and concerns about that. So that's one aspect. Another aspect is doing a welfare survey on the farms. So go into the farm, and I have two methods that I've been doing. One of them is a transect survey. So you walk up and down in the chicken farm and basically note all of the poor instances of poor welfare and what they are. So that's kind of like a cruder way of doing it, but it's been shown to be quite effective. So that's one aspect. And then the other aspect is using the welfare quality methods. So penning 25 chickens in different locations of the farm and looking at their hot burn and foot pad dermatitis and cleanliness and things like that, and weighing them to see what their welfare is on a sort of a deeper level. And then the third aspect is using an infrared camera to see if that can be used as an indicator of welfare. And on top of all of those things, I'm looking at the microclimate in different areas of the chicken farm to see how good the systems are at maintaining the climate throughout the house. So it's quite a lot going on. So I've collected all that data now, and now I'm trying to start wading through the analysis. Yeah, it's been really, really interesting. And there's a lot of variation of the types of farms. Although I tried to kind of keep it to one type of farm, like bigger commercial farms that I was going to. Even within that, there was a lot of different variation depending on how the farm is managed and various things. So yeah, that's kind of what it's about. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I was just curious about, we were talking about broilers, and we're going to go to the layer welfare later on in Indonesia, if you will share. But before that, I was curious to know about how big of a facility you're talking about. How many chickens, how many broilers in a house? Like in the US, we have like 20,000, 15,000 broilers in a big house commercial, like say 20,000, 25,000. So
So it varies quite a lot, but the standard size is around 23,000 on one level. But here they have multiple level farms, so sometimes you have floors of chickens. You can have up to about three floors of chickens in one house, so you can have like 60,000 birds in one chicken house. I'm going to look at the differences between the levels as well, how that affects welfare and the climate and things. Because Indonesia is a hot, tropical, humid climate. So, it's hard to keep them cool. In some areas on high elevation, it can get really cold as well and damp. So, yeah, there's a lot of factors. There's kind of like a thing, you know, they've taken the kind of the genetics and the systems from Europe or the US, you know, the same kind of systems, and they're using it here and trying to work out if that's effective or not really.
Right. Yeah. I was just curious about, like, apart from the welfare, the work or research ideas or what you are doing right now, you shared with us. Is there something like more than that? Like, I know welfare and behavior are not that related, but it affects each other. Is there something about the behavior side or behavioral side that your research addresses are you thinking about?
Previously I've done behavioral research, but in this I haven't really included it much, apart from thermoregulation, like panting and huddling. I did take that those behavioral measures, but otherwise I stuck mainly to kind of other things. I think some other people have used behavioral measures on broiler farms. It's a bit tricky because you know, you're only looking at it at one snapshot in time, so that would be a lot more intensive to do behavioral observations. Although actually I did do gait scoring as well, which you could say is a behavioral observation too. But yeah, I didn't do too much on the behavior on this project. Yeah, maybe in the future.
Yeah. No, thanks. The other thing is about switching a gear a little bit from a broiler to a layer production there. What can you tell us about the layer welfare in Indonesia? And maybe I think it's not just Indonesia represents the whole Asia, but a parts of Asia, especially as you said, is kind of more on the coastal side, right? Like it's a different in Indonesia when you think about it. It's a lot of rainfall, I guess, there, right? It's a lot of monsoons are there. So can you share a little bit on that? How the geographical or location of these climatic thing or the weather-wise and the temperature-wise of these different seasons would change the production patterns? Can you share a little bit on the layer side and maybe on, if you feel as comfortable, broiler side? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more on the broilers. I don't know so much about the layer side, but I'm sure the problems are, you know, similar. For the layers, yeah, as I said, there's some work going on about transitioning to cage-free systems, which is great. It's a big step forward from the battery cages, of course, in terms of animal welfare. But it's still, you know, not an ideal system if you think about, you know, how far you could go with the free-range systems and things. But yeah, they would work quite differently out here if you're doing that kind of a thing, I guess. But in terms of the climate and the location of Indonesia, yeah, there is high rainfall and a lot of mountains and volcanoes, of course, which, yeah, means a lot of the farms, you know, some of them are really low down, like close to sea level, and some of them are like 800 meters high. And that difference, you can tell, you know, there's a lot of difference in the way that they manage the farm and also the chickens and the climate and things. Yeah, also to do with the climate. When I was conducting my research, there was a long drought, and so the rice production wasn't going as it normally does, which meant that they use rice husks a lot as the litter substrate, and there was a shortage of that. So there was a lot of problems with the litter, which of course affects the leg health of the chickens and the overall health of the chickens a lot. So that was one aspect that I found that's really, really important in broiler farming here, which is really heavily influenced by, yeah, the climate and other aspects. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Cara. Thanks for sharing. Switching a gear a little bit from a raising side of the poultry to a collaboration that you are doing right now with in Scotland, you said University of Edinburgh, there's a professor that you're working with. How do you see this need for this worldwide collaboration, especially like you're in Asia and then there's a Europe collaborator there, learning and giving back and taking from each other's? What kind of importance do you see? I know that it's very important, but in particular in your project in animal welfare, what are some of these things you can bring in from the other country versus you can give back?
Yeah, thanks. I think it's something that's really important, particularly in terms of animal welfare, which is quite a maybe a Western ideal, kind of thinking about the welfare of the animals. Here in Indonesia, the general public don't really have any concern about animal welfare. So there's not a demand, there's not a push for higher welfare projects, products or anything like that. But it's necessary for, you know, other reasons like biosecurity, other things that are global issues like antibiotic resistance, water security and general pollution and all sorts of things like that, like diseases and everything. They're global issues and they are affected by intensive animal farming. So I think it's really important that the whole world is, you know, trying to improve animal welfare everywhere in the world. And I think the push does kind of have to come from countries where there's already a lot of expertise regarding these things, which is generally, in the US or in Europe and the UK. So, in my opinion, I think there needs to be a lot of capacity building and knowledge transfer over to Asia in general. And also, then the people here need to put that into context here, you know, like they know their own context. It's difficult to come in as a foreigner and start saying, oh, you need to do animal welfare in this way or that way, because the context is so different. So I think it's really, really essential about the capacity building, funding as well. You know, there needs to be funds because there's not a lot of funds for animal welfare work in this area at the moment. General research, collaboration, learning from each other. I think it's all, really, really essential for improving animal welfare over here.
I'm really glad that you are working in Indonesia and you're bringing, as you just said, about the knowledge and ideas. Now, again, you have to see the context because, as you said, it may not perfectly work, but also there are like some gray line just to look at, okay, we cannot go up to this limit, but hey, can we come some kind of a middle happy medium or middle point is still helping these contexts, like the context of Indonesia, and maybe learning from these Western countries, like a lot of developed resources and technologies. I think that's how we are right now overall, no matter in the welfare or in nutrition side or behavior side. I think we're like in a melting pot, like right, melting point like that. So I'm pretty sure we're going to learn, especially country like Indonesia and other countries in Asia, will slowly learn, trying to adapt, particularly depending on the situation of the country and the scenario, as you said. I think that's kind of overall goal for having this a global networking, I guess, that we can bring in. That's a very good thing that you shared. The other thing about I want to ask you a little bit about your. What is about your research? It's what is very exciting that you're thinking it's gonna come out out of your research. What's your future plan? Like, let's say you have some survey done or you investigated your research in this, and what's your further step that you're thinking of, depending upon what you're expecting?
So I'm hoping that the research that I'm doing can be used to help the farmers improve the welfare on their farms for a start. So I've just completed, I visited 14 farms, and for all of the farms, I've just completed their individual reports to try and tell them specifically what they could do to improve the welfare on their farms. And they're all quite different and they have different potential solutions. I don't know if the solutions will work, but there's some ideas I've given them. Some other things are kind of like quite basic training, like how to effectively euthanize sick and injured birds, things like lighting programs, making sure that the lights are turned out for some periods of the night, things, really basic things like that, which I think could have a really good impact on the birds and not cost the farmers anything really, or not too much. Other things I'm excited about, things like maybe doing some training on the fermentation of the litter, so they can use fermented litter and they could learn how to, you know, reuse that. And that could be really, really good for them in terms of economically. And also it's really, from what I've seen, looks really great for the poultry as well. So some really, really basic solutions, which I think a little bit of training and a little bit of, a little bit of assistance could be put into place over here. That's kind of what I'm excited about. Other things, kind of longer term things, maybe looking at using this research to support kind of developing standards schemes to help the farmers to, you know, maybe get a higher welfare standard or anything like that, which I think that could become a market for if we approached it in the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. When you mentioned about the liter fermentation, because I was thinking more of a rice hulls, because they use the rice hulls as their liter, right?
Yeah.
That would be exciting to see how that goes, and they can reuse the liter. Now, let me ask you, do you know if they use any liter amendment, any treatments in their liter in Indonesia? Like, you know, they use liter, do they treat so far?
Do they treat it? I mean, apart from adding like the lime, what's it called?
Limestone.
Yeah, limestone powder and things like that a little bit, but generally not really, as far as I'm aware. Yeah.
Because in here, in not most of the commercial farms, we treat the liter. But again, there are a lot of product coming in the market. It's a whole area about liter research in universities and research stations are doing it. But it perfectly makes sense what you're doing it, because maybe in the future, somebody can do, like in that part of the world in Indonesia, looking at the amendment types and what we can bring in from, again, international collaboration and ideas.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's so much potential here. There's a lot of opportunity for change and improvement, and people are really excited about it. So, yeah, I think it's definitely a great place if people want to come and do research and be able to see things being implemented or, changing. I think there's a lot, they're very open for, collaboration.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Thanks for sharing. I was also curious a little bit about what kind of diet profile that you all feed to birds, broilers. Like, let's say we have your corn and soybean meal. Have you ever gotten any chance to look at the diet or somebody formulates?
Not me, really. They generally just use the commercial brand diets, as far as I've seen. Yeah. And a lot of it is quite expensive, and parts of it are definitely imported as well. So that's a big factor, which is a big expense for the farmers too.
Yeah.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boehringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik. We are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. For over 40 years, Jeffo has been redefining animal nutrition with high-performance, non-medicated solutions. At the core is Jeffo Matrix technology, a disruptive approach that synchronizes nutrient release for precise delivery. Active in 65 countries, we develop cutting-edge formulas, essential oils, enzymes, and acidifiers to optimize health, performance, and reproduction. Jeffo is transforming animal feeding, making life easier for animals and people who care for them.
So we are almost at the end, but as a tradition of this poultry podcast, we can ask you a few questions about your favorite poultry-related book first, if there's anything.
My Bible, my go-to book, is the Welfare in Practice book, the broiler, what is it called? Broiler Chickens, Welfare in Practice. I've used that a lot, and that's really helped me learn. It's basic, but it's pretty useful.
That's cool. Thanks for sharing. Okay, let's not talk about any poultry or ag related, but what's other favorite book and that you want to share to the people that you usually think about when I ask this question?
My book that I always remember is called A Whale for the Killing by Farley Mowat. As an animal advocate, it's really, really nice story. Not a great ending, but it's a very passionate book, and it's very, very interesting. I highly recommend that for anyone who's an advocate for animals.
Yeah, you have to text me that book, the second one, The Whale and the...
A Whale for the Killing, it's called.
Okay, I would be interested in that one. Okay, so in your opinion, let me ask you this question. You may not have to answer, like, you may not have answer for this, but whatever experience you can share, in your opinion, what sets the poultry, successful poultry professionals apart from those that are not?
I don't know if it's a recipe for success, but I think having passion for what you do is really important for whatever it is, because then, you know, you can just work on it and you want to improve and you can be innovative. And yeah, I think passion is a real key, and having support and the opportunity, because if no one gives you the opportunity or no one's supporting you, then even with all the passion, yeah, you can't get anywhere. So I think those are two key things that I've found that have really helped me.
Yeah, Cara, I think you really talked what I thought. So yeah, passion. You have to have passion for sure. But you need to have an opportunity, right? Because there's no way you can accomplish everything. You could be successful in some of these, but if you're not getting the chances and opportunities, there's no way you can just flourish or develop your passion. I mean, promote your passion. So, I mean, thanks. That's really a good thing. And I hope we all learn and keep that mind from this episode. Cara, thank you so much for coming and speaking to us about broiler chicken welfare and a little bit on the layer side and overall welfare situation in Indonesia. We hope to have you in the future, maybe when you finish your PhD, maybe before, a little different episode about what did you really find and what you're going to go, where you're going to go from there. Thank you. Do you have anything to address to the audience before we depart?
Thank you very much. It's been lovely. Time has flown by, and it's been really nice to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Cara. I wish you good luck for finishing up your PhD, rest of your work. And thank you all for listening to the episode today of the Poultry Podcast. Again, this is my first episode, and I would like to introduce all. Again, my name is Dr. Pratima Adhikari from Mississippi State University. I will see you in the next episode. Have a lovely day. Bye.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.